I will start with a brief survey of descent theory. Actually, I should say very algebraic and classical descent theory. Let me state the problem, or one way to state the problem in a very non-categorical way for the moment. You take an extension of commutative rings, or of maybe non-commutative rings. You consider a module or an algebra or anything more refined, a Hopf algebra or whatever, a graded algebra over A, and you ask if there is an object over B such that if you extend it using an induction functor that you get N. Such an object is called a form, and then classify all these forms. And the most classical result is, of course, Galois descent theory. First for fields, you can find that in one of the early Springer lecture notes. You take a Galois field extension in the very classical sense, and then you can descend. If you have a Galois descent datum, and one way of describing this is that consists of a group morphism from the Galois group G to the other morphisms, the K automorphisms, and you require that the things in the image are sigma semi-linear. So that means if you bring something in L out, then you have to apply a sigma. And then the descended module or algebra, whatever you want, is just the module of invariants. Now you can generalize this thing. First of all, you want to drop the Galois condition, and you want commutative rings. Well, Grothendieck did even better. He did it over schemes. I won't give details. I don't want to bother you with schemes. But what was done later to Swiss mathematicians Knus and Ooyang Goeren, I misspelled his name here, I see. It appeared also in the Springer lecture notes a little later. What they basically did, they gave an affine version of the Grothendieck descent theory, which I describe here. So you take a morphism of commutative rings. You define the descent datum to be consist of a module over A, together with a map going from A tensor N to N tensor A, satisfying two properties. All these descent data form a category, and there is a pair of adjoint functors between category of B modules and the descent data. You go back by taking all the n in n such that g1 tensor n is n tensor 1. This gives you an adjoint pair of functors, and you have the descent if you have a category equivalence. And it can be shown, this is done by Knus Ooyang Goeren, if you have a faithfully flat extension, then you certainly have the descent. This is not necessary. Purity is a necessary and sufficient condition. Now, this is all nice, and it has applications. For example, there are many applications in the theoretical treatment of the Brouwer group of a field or a commutative ring. But unfortunately, to do explicit computations, if you want to do them, then Galois descent theory is much more suitable. And actually, using the Galois descent theory, you can do explicit calculations. You can prove classification theorems for certain things. For example, quite recently, I managed to give a classification of gradings by a certain group on matrix algebras using Galois descent theory. I talked about this last year during the meeting in Haute-Bordeaux in Belgium. And this is actually not the topic of my talk today. You might ask what happens over non-commutative rings. Well, there is a paper that appeared in the literature by an Italian called Cipolla, and I gave also the title of the paper because it's written in Italian, goes back to 1976. And it was revived recently by Philip Noose, 1997, considering a morphism of non-commutative rings. And actually, he defined what he called, it's maybe not the good terminology, but anyway, he called it descent datum, consisting again of a module and now a map, not from A tensor N to N tensor A, because A tensor N is not well defined in the non-commutative case, but from N to N tensor B, also satisfying two conditions. And actually you can show that in the commutative case this is isomorphic to what you find in Knuth-Ojanguri. And the thing about purity is not known in this case as far as I know, but faithfully flat is sufficient to have an equivalence of categories. Again, of course, this is not so suitable for explicit computations because of this tensor product, which you don't have in the Gawa theory. There are a lot of other variations that can be viewed as special cases of the descent in the sense of Cipolla or Knuth-Ojanguri that are more explicit. I'll give you a first example coming from graded ring theory. You take a G-graded ring, I should say, not a module, but a G-graded ring, and you take the part of degree E, where E is the neutral element of the ring. Then there is again, an adjoint pair between modules over the part of degree E and the G-graded modules. And this turns to be an equivalence if and only if the ring A is strongly graded. By strongly graded, I mean the following thing. So graded means this thing. If you have equality, then you have strongly graded. And it's a well-known theorem in graded ring theory that you have category equivalence in these situations, which can be viewed also as a special case of descent theory. There are other generalizations. Next thing, I take a Hopf algebra. I don't dare to take a quasi-Hopf algebra or a weak Hopf algebra because then things become much more complicated. Or maybe not, as I shall tell you later on. And you introduce the notion of a relative Hopf module, which is at the same time a module with an action and a coaction, satisfying these conditions, which we saw in the previous talks today. And again, there is an adjoint pair of functors. Now, definition. One calls an H-Galois extension if a certain canonical map is an isomorphism. Here I adopt the Swedler notation, so the coaction is denoted by a rho, and formal notation A0 tensor A1 is just a notation for rho of A, and I omit summation symbols. And then it can be shown, well, there is more than this. There are things in the other direction. I will talk about it later on. If you have faithful flatness, then, and if you have an a Galois extension, then you have an equivalence of categories between a category of B modules and the category of relative Hopf modules. The functor in this direction sends and to the co-invariants. And this was first investigated by Swedler in the special situation where H is finitely generated projective over a commutative ring as an algebra, and in the situation where B is just K it was later generalized by Schneider. And actually, some of the previous examples turn out to be special cases. If you take for H a group ring, then you find the strongly graded rings back. This is an observation of Ulbrich. And if you take the dual of a group ring, where you take a finite group, you find Galois theory over fields, if you work over fields. And you find exactly the canonical map that was mentioned yesterday by Andy Magritte in his talk, if you work for Galois theory of commutative rings. If you replace the Hopf algebra by a coalgebra, there is something you can do. Quite recently, Brzezinski and Magritte introduced the notion of coalgebra Galois extension. And there's something strange going on, because what you can see what you see in the theory of Hopf algebras is that you use the multiplication on the Hopf algebra also. So if you take a coalgebra, then you don't have multiplication. So, but one way or another, Brzezinski and Magritte could go around this difficulty, and they arrive at the right notion of coalgebra Galois extension. I don't give details now. They will follow in a next part of the talk. Good. So, what is a common feature of all these notions, of all these situations where we have one or another version of classical descent theory, let's say? In any situation, you look at a module of the big ring with some more structure. You have a certain map, which could be an action or a coaction. You have indeed something. So let's try to generalize all these things. Well, and a good proposal for generalization was given by Doi and independently by Koppinen at the same time, but there is a gap between the appearance of the two papers, which appeared respectively 1992 and 1995 in Journal of Algebra and Journal of Pure and Applied Algebra. They consider the following situation. They take a Hopf algebra, an H co-module algebra, which is an algebra in the category of H co-modules, and exactly the dual. And then they look at modules with a right action and a right C coaction with a compatibility relation that looks exactly like the compatibility relations that we had earlier on. And actually, this turned out to be a tool that worked well. It unifies many of the things that we had in the first part, the modules that we had there, and even some other modules. Modules, co-modules, the relative Hopf modules are a special case, the graded modules, and some other things, among them the Jetter-Drinfeld modules. And they turned out to be a tool to do some computations and unifications. These modules were studied extensively by myself in cooperation with Militaro and Zhu. And for a long time we thought this is the good framework to look at these type of problems. But then I organized a meeting in Brussels in 1998, and at the very last moment Brzezinski showed up there, and he came up with something more general. He avoided the use of the Hopf algebra, and he came up with the following thing. He looks at an algebra and a coalgebra, and a map connecting C tensor A and A tensor C, satisfying certain properties. I use the following notation. Psi C tensor A, of course, this is very inconvenient. You have a psi, it lands in a tensor product, and the source is also a tensor product. I write formally A psi tensor C psi, and if there is a second psi, then I write capital psi or indices or whatever. And then I have four conditions, which can be expressed also by commutative diagrams or by braid diagrams, whatever you want. And we call this an entwining structure. And then we introduce entwined modules, satisfying the compatibility relations, and all this generalizes the Dolhoff modules. And actually, everything works well. It is more general, although maybe not that more general. Peter Schauenburg proved the theorem that under certain finiteness conditions, given an entwining structure, he can define bialgebra such that these entwined structures come from Dolhoff structures. And actually, it's more general. And the computations get easier also. Although this seems a little weird, nevertheless, computations become easier. And so I thought, well, okay, this is the end of the story. Now we have the good thing. And then, just before the turn of the century, Takeuchi wrote in a match review that the entwined modules can be viewed as co-modules over a coring, which turns out to be something funny in the sense that corings have been introduced a long time ago. They appear in the work of Swedler. Swedler does a couple of things with them, and then they were forgotten for a long time, at least among ring theorists. There are some other applications in combinatorics, some people told me. But anyway, the ring theorists did not look at it. They more or less considered it as a weird subject. But this changed after Takeuchi's observation. It turned out that if you look at corings, many of the computations that were done for the DOI modules and the entwined modules just collapse to very easy things. So let me just briefly review the definition. What is a coring? It is a co-algebra in the category of bimodules over a non-commutative ring. You could consider it as being the proper notion of co-algebra but over a commutative ring, but this is not entirely true. Because, so what you need is a co-multiplication and the co-unit. These have to be co-algebra maps, but you have to be careful. These have to be bimodule maps. And I use the Swedler type notation for this. But you have to be careful if you take a coring over a commutative ring. It's not necessarily a co-algebra because the left and the right action might be different. And this is not what you... And this is what we will have in some of our applications also. And then you can introduce modules, or I should say co-modules. It's a right A module with a right linear map, satisfying the usual co-associativity and co-unit properties. Okay, good. Let me give an example. And actually, I'm giving you the example. Maybe some of you will say we are not surprised at all to see this example in view of some of the monadic or comonadic treatment of descent theory, as I will tell you in just a second. So, I take a ring morphism. And as a co-module, as recurring, I propose the tensor product of A with itself, and then I consider a common multiplication. So this has to go from A tensor A to four copies of A tensor A, but in the middle you tensor over A, that means you can cancel out one A, and this is canonically isomorphic to three copies of A. And I just take A tensor 1 tensor B, and as co-unit I just take the multiplication. This coring has been considered by Swedler already. It's called the Swedler canonical coring. Okay, let's look at the co-modules. So I need a co-action. Again, I can cancel out an A, and I land in A tensor BA. And then it turns out that the right D co-modules are nothing else than the descent data in the sense of Cipolla. So all the things that Cipolla did can be restated over corings, although he didn't know this at the time that he was writing it down. And of course, I'm not going to talk about this, but given a coring, you can associate a co-monad to it, you can do the descent data, and you get exactly this. Okay, here is a second example. I take, well, and this is basically Takeuchi's observation. I take a right-right entwining structure, and I take as coring the tensor product of the algebra and the co-algebra. It's a bimodule, and you see here, from the left and from the right, different actions, even if everything, every algebra that you write down there is commutative, and the co-algebra is co-commutative. If I let A act from the right, I have to jump over C, and to do that, I apply the map psi. And the co-multiplication and co-unit are just easy. Again, making an identification where I cancel out a tensor over A in the middle. Let me put this here. Well, and then it turns out, again making the identification, that an entwined module is nothing else than a co-module. Good, so we have two basic examples. Yes, and we have actually many more, because you can look at all the special cases of entwined modules. These are all modules over a co-coring, so the graded modules, the Hopf modules, etc. Good, let's move to the general theory of corings and see what we can do. I call an element X in C group-like. Well, I take the usual definition of group-like elements. And I denote the set of group-likes by G of C. And I ask the following question, what can I actually do with such a group-like element? Well, there are two very elementary observations. First of all, so I take a coring C over A, and then I also take a certain morphism of rings. And D will also be always be the canonical coring, the Swedler coring. And C arbitrary. Well, the group-like elements are nothing else than the coring morphisms from D to C, at least those coring elements that commute with all the elements of B. And it is actually very easy. You take a homomorphism, you associate it with the canonical map. Actually, it means that the coring map is also a bimodule map, so it is given by the image of 1 tensor 1, which is very easy, of course. And there is a second very elementary interpretation of now. All the group-like elements, what you can do is you can ask the following. So you have an A covering C. You can ask, is A itself a co-module? Well, if you take a group-like element, then you can define a co-module structure on A. So again, you have to make an identification, A tensor A, C. You can identify this with C. So you need a map from A tensor C. What you do is you put rho of A equal to XA. And if X is group-like, you get a good co-module structure. Okay, now I want to do the following. So let's take a morphism. I can look at the co-modules over the canonical coring, and I have an adjoint pair. And I can control more or less when this is an equivalence. Now suppose I have another coring. Suppose I fix a group like which commutes with the elements in B. Then I have a canonical map. Of course, if this canonical map is an isomorphism, then these two are also isomorphic. If this is an equivalence, then I can descend from here to here. And that's basically our machinery. Easy corollary. So I take a ring morphism. A coring is isomorphic to the canonical coring if and only if there exists an X such that the can is bijective. Okay, definition. If this is the case, then I call C together with the fixed group-like element a Galois coring. And this definition actually is due to Brzezinski. Good, before switching to examples, let me give a couple of alternative characterizations. There is more, but I don't want to go into full detail. CX is a Galois coring, if and only if the following thing, and this also looks neat, although it's not so deep. If you have a coring, you can look at the coring maps from A to C. Remember, A is itself a co-module, since we fixed the group-like elements. And then you can look at the HOMs from A to C, tensor BA, and you can just take the evaluation map. That has to be an isomorphism. Actually, this is not so difficult because how is it? The HOM C AC something in here is determined by the image of 1, and if you apply epsilon after that, then you find A again, and then you identify it with the canonical map A tensor BA to A. And there is more. If you replace C by a co-module and you apply the evaluation map, then you also obtain an isomorphism. In this situation, it's not necessary for all co-modules, but for those ones that are relatively CA injective. By this, I mean injectiveness in the category of C co-modules, But for those morphisms that become a retraction, if I consider them as a morphism just of A modules. So in the proof of the equivalence here, you apply that the Hom CAC is nothing else than the co-invariance functor. Maybe I should describe this. So given a C co-module, I define the co-invariance relative to the choice of the X, which I won't denote because I will always fix X, the M such that rho of M is M tensor X. And then maybe I should denote, I should recall you that this is then nothing else than the A in A such that AX. Good, so what I just told you, so if CX is Galois, then we have an isomorphism of co-module categories. And then if we know that MD and MB are equivalent, for example, if A is faithfully flat, then you have an equivalence of categories going from MB to MC. And basically, this is what happens. In Galois theory. Okay, and I have a description of the connecting functors. Okay, there is a theorem. So, of course, faithful flatness is sufficient. It is not always necessary because you can take for C just D and then look at the commutative case and then purity is sufficient. I don't know, or we don't know, a necessary and sufficient condition in general. But Wiesbauer could prove a theorem that generalized at least partly some previous theorems by Swedler and later by Schneider. The coring is Galois, and at the same time, A over B is faithfully flat. If and only if A is flat and A is a projective generator in the category, or if and only if C over A is flat, and at the same time you have an equivalence. So faithfully flat is necessary if you assume that C over A is flat. By the way, in the proof he used module theory, that was mainly his contribution to the fact that he could combine his background in module theory to prove this type of theorem. Okay, example. I take an entwining structure. You can associate a coring to this. I need a group-like element. What do I take for a group-like element? Well, I fix a group-like element in the coalgebra and I take one tensor X. And if you translate into this situation our general definition, then you obtain the definition of Brzezinski and Majid for coalgebra Galois extension, at least something that is equivalent to it. The definition of Brzezinski and Majid looked a little bit more cumbersome, but it can be shown to be equivalent to this. And also this explains why you don't need the multiplication in C anymore in this by just choosing this group-like element. It also explains the necessity of choosing in certain situations a group-like element, which is something which looked artificial to me the first time I saw it, but this explains why you have to do it. Okay, other example. You take a finite group, acting as a group of automorphism on the K-algebra A. And let's assume that the invariants are just K, and you can take K a field or a commutative ring, whatever you want. I put C equal to a direct sum of G copies of A, and I put on them a bimodule structure. Remark again that the left and the right action are not the same, even if A is commutative, and the co-multiplication, and I have a group-like element. And if you write down the canonical morphism, then you find exactly the canonical morphism that Andy Magid gave us yesterday. And we recover classical Galois theory. Other example, I take an H co-module algebra, I take the co-invariants, and I put C equal to A tensor H with a bimodule structure, and I recover exactly the definition of Hopf-Galois extension, as you can find in his Riegler, and in the case where the co-invariants are K and as you can find it in Schneider, and when B is K in Sweden already. Okay. So this shows that we recover various versions of Galois theory, we unify it, and actually if you start doing the computations, everything gets much easier. Okay, for the next part, which is basically due to myself, Verkruijse and Xuanhong Wang, I take a co-algebra, a co-ring, and I take its left dual. I do everything to the left. And I remark the following: this left dual, the ideality is a ring. This is the multiplication. There's a neutral element which is just the co-unit. Well, then actually this looks a little bit like the convolution, but it looks a little bit strange because the F is inside the brackets here. It's not completely what you expect. But actually, it is the only thing you can do if you try to define a multiplication. Well, there is one alternative, that is to put the F here and the G there, then you have the opposite ring. This is not what I want to do, because if I do it like this, then there is an injection of A into the dual coin. And actually, there is a functor from co-modules to modules. Well, usually if you go from co-modules to modules, you have to switch from right to left, but because of my convention here, it stays on the right. This is the functor. And actually the functor is an isomorphism if the coring is finitely generated projective. Okay. Now I fix a group-like element as I did before. And I take the ring of co-invariants. Then, as we have seen already, there is an adjunction. And I introduce some terminology coming from various computations that had been done before in ring theory. Unfortunately, the terminology also for Galois is not always consistent throughout the literature. So we take as a definition for Galois that the canonical map is isomorphic. But for example, if you look in Swiegel's old papers, He requires faithfully flat. Okay, so what we are interested in is the adjunction being an equivalence. Well, if the co-unit is an isomorphism, then we say that the weak structure theorem is satisfied. If you have equivalence, then we say that the strong structure theorem is satisfied. Good. I take the canonical coring now. The canonical map induces a dual map in the opposite direction, and this is what a dual map is. Oh yes, and I should recall, of course, so what's the dual of D? So that is from A tensor B, A to A. Well, this is isomorphic. This left A linearity, you can cancel out the A here, and you get HOM A A. And actually, if you look at the multiplication here, it turns out that this is the opposite. Good. Now, there are some obvious facts. Of course, and I should say this is only in one direction. If C is Galois, then CAN is an isomorphism, then star CAN is also an isomorphism. The converse is true if C and D are at the same time reflexive. That means if you apply the star again, but then to the right-hand side, then you obtain C again, and the same thing for D. And a special case of this is when C and D are finitely generated projective as A modules. And of course, if you have Galois and if D satisfies the strong structure theorem, then C also does. And another obvious thing, if C satisfies the weak structure theorem, then C is Galois, and this is because the canonical map is a particular case of the co-unit of the adjunction. So all this is by definition, so it's obvious. But I should stress, if you look at one of the theorems in Sweeler's book, namely giving the relation between CAN and CAN star, if you look at his assumptions, then you see that his main theorem follows exactly from this observation, so that it is completely trivialized. By the way, if you look in Sweeler's, if you are familiar with it, you will see that the opposite also comes in there. Okay, so A is the right C co-module, and it is therefore a right R module. It is in a trivial way also a left B module, and it turns out to be a BR bimodule. Yeah. Now, I look at the endomorphism rings. It's also a left R module. You just modify the multiplication a little bit, and there's a bracket missing here. Okay, and then I do the following. I take a submodule of the dual coring, satisfying a certain property. If I have time, I will explain you. Well, I will not have time, but it can be made plausible why you take this. And then there is a lemma, and this Q is an RB bimodule. And then theorem, B and R are connected via a Morita context, and the connecting bimodules are just A and Q, which are bimodules that are just proved. Here are the connecting maps. Of course, Morita context, you want to know when the maps tau and mu are surjective, because you then have equivalence of categories. Well, there are easy criteria. It turns out that the map tau is surjective exactly when there exists a lambda in Q such that lambda x is 1. And it is also equivalent to the fact that for every right R module, a certain map is bijective. This is for tau. Of course, if you have this for tau, you can look at all the properties in the Morita theorem and it gives you interesting things, but since they are obviously following from the Morita theorem, I don't state them. There's a problem with the subjectivity of mu, and the problem is that you can only discuss it in the situation where C over A is finitely generated projective. Otherwise, it seems that the Morita context is not just refined enough to give you the equivalence. There are some ways to get around this by looking at rationality arguments, but this is something that we are still working out in full generality, but we know that it works at least in special cases. So in the finitely generated projective case, these are the necessary and sufficient conditions for tau being surjective. Maybe I should tell you a word about the fact why you need this finitely generated projective. Actually, where did we find our inspiration to do all this? There is a theorem by Doi associating a Morita context to an H co-module algebra A in a situation where H is a Hopf algebra. And it connects and then a certain A and a certain Q, and then certain maps. And this turns out to be exactly the Morita context that we have here in our situation. And this thing here is, in this situation, nothing else than the star C. And by the way, I should tell you, the multiplication on this looks like a twisted convolution. It's denoted by a smash, and this is the reason why we take the smash notation in our general situation. There's something else. Cohen, Fishman, Montgomery take a finite dimensional Hopf algebra over a field or a Frobenius algebra over a commutative ring. And they take A and H module algebra. And then they look at the invariants and then a smash product. And they find that they are connected by a Morita context. One of the connecting bimodules is A, and the other one is also A and not Q. And so it looks like there is a connection between the two of them. But there's something strange, because here you have conditions. The actions on A here, by the way, are described using heavily the Frobenius structure. So the fact that the finite dimensional Hopf algebra is Frobenius. And here there's something else. Well, actually, what we did is the following. In fact, what you can see is that in our Morita context here, so we start from a core ring, but there's no core ring here, it's just rings, as you would expect from a Morita context. Well, we did the following. You take a ring extension. I am finished. You take a ring extension and then you associate a map satisfying certain conditions to this. And then you can construct another Morita context. You can construct a Morita context R, where you can be define it as certain invariants. This plays the role of the coaction, and a Q here and certain maps. And we can show that this is isomorphic to A exactly when R over A is Frobenius, explaining everything and tracing it back to rings. Now, as a final remark, I won't discuss things here, but you might think now that you can do everything over corings. It is not true. In his paper, Doi discusses the notion of cleft extension, and cleft implies Galois and strong structure theorem. We try to generalize this to corings, but we could not do it. The best thing we could do is to generalize it to entwining structures. And the reason why it fails over corings is the following thing. On this thing, you have the twisted convolution, but you also have the usual convolutions, which you don't have over corings. And I'm sorry for